we start today's episode, just to let you know, you can now nominate for the 2025 Northern Power Women Awards to be in with a chance of celebrating with changemakers, trailblazers and advocates on the 6th of March 2025. Nominate now at wearepower.net.
Northern Power Women Podcast. For your career and your life, no matter what business you're in.
Well, hello. As we wave a fond farewell to summer, please come back. We can warm our hearts with a brand new episode, episode 14 of the Northern Power Women Podcast. Is your career a ladder or a labyrinth? I'm Sam Walker. Hello again. Now, despite a bus lane fine and getting trapped in a car park, we had an absolute ball at the recording of the podcast in Manchester this month. A big thank you to our wonderful host, BNY Mellon, where we managed to get David Bowie chat into our discussion on social mobility and career progression, as you do.
I mean, after seeing David Bowie in those tight pants, I don't want to go in any labyrinth.
You'll hear the great conversation that I had with the managing partner at Leeds-based law firm DLI Piper. She's called Alison Page, and we talked about whether she had any female role models when she was growing up.
No, bluntly speaking, most of my friends' parents stayed at home. My mum was one of the only working mums. They all stayed at home and brought up the children. Yeah. I didn't have female role models.
In Ask the Hive, it's all about getting a job if you don't have specific industry experience.
All sorts of promises are made by the recruiting industry to match the right person to the job. But when that job is so poorly defined, what you get is garbage in, garbage out.
But before we crack on with all of that, just take a moment, just for a moment, to reflect on the insanely productive month that has been the reality of our founder, our CEO, our great leader, Simone Roche.
Well, this month has been an absolute scorcher to match the balmy northern climate. It started with me speaking at the Institute of Leadership and Management Summit in London, discussing leading with difference. Then it was off to the northeast and to Newcastle, where we hosted a power circle with some fantastic influencers and powerful leaders across the northeast. And Jake Berry, the Northern Powerhouse Minister, attended as well to get involved in the discussion. The next day, we were at the first Northern Powerhouse Summit, being held as part of the Great Exhibition of the North. And Jake Berry, the Minister, announced that I now am an inclusion advisor to the government for the Northern Powerhouse. So really look forward to supporting and driving the agenda across the North. I also spoke on a panel of brilliant leaders, chaired by the fantastic Alice Webb from the BBC. And the day was hosted by Colette Roche, the COO of Manchester United. Following the summit, there was also more collaborative talks. I've now engaged with the NP11, which is colloquially the Council of the North, which is the lectures led by the wonderful Sir Roger Marsh. And we're delighted that since the time in the Northeast, we're also going to begin a series of activities, including recording our next podcast at Teesside University, another podcast in Newcastle later this year. Notwithstanding, we're going to hold Northern Power Futures in Newcastle in January or February. We're just searching for a venue. And in the spring in Teesside, we're going to be hosting our second Northern Power Women Conference. Thanks to Professor Jane Turner, Alison Shaw, Adele Mitchison, our ambassador, for their completely unwavering support, and so many others. We've got another collaboration from the summit. It's never ending. We are joining with the Northern Health Science Alliance for a series of events from the autumn. Watch this space. We've also been up to Lancaster to pilot our new Northern Power Women's Schools programme. Thank you to Lancaster Girls' School and our ambassador, Jane Dalton, for making this happen. Hear what the girls had to say prior to their test workshop earlier this month.
Okay, so the project was born out of a shared sort of common vision that all of the group held. And Sarah joined later, actually, because we all felt we just wanted people that were on board with the vision. And yeah, it's sort of come from that, and also the fact our head teacher thought we'd be good for it.
I was particularly interested in this coming from a very socially aware background, this only helped me to research further into feminism and the whole issues around sexism. And being able to build up a project or a award scheme was very interesting as well, because we'd never previously been involved in anything like that. And it helped me to passionately kind of delve deeper into the basis of sexism.
So today we're doing a workshop to like test it out, to see whether it would work on a bigger scale if we took it to other schools, or did it as like a longer thing, as like to set up a school scheme to promote the gender equality.
Yeah, so as Nell mentioned before me, the kind of broader aim is to enrol it in other schools and roll it out there across the north. And we'll hopefully, if this workshop goes well, then be able to modify it a bit and get the feedback and roll something out across different schools.
And there's more dates for your diary. The 4th of September, the nominations open for the Northern Power Women Awards, the fourth year. And we've got the date next year, 18th of March at Manchester Central. Yes, a new venue. So please check out the ticket details online, because the previous 3 years have all sold out, so we'd love to see you there. And don't forget to start thinking about those brilliant role model nominations. 23rd and 24th of November, Manchester Central is hosting our first Northern Power Futures Festival, supported by EY and Vodafone. We've got an expo, opportunities for about 50 organisations and charities to be part of the discussions of the future of work in the North. And we're also looking for speakers for the event too, and workshop hosts. And it's really a peer-to-peer learning style, but please check out the website and get involved. I'm still going, there's more dates. We're collaborating with our futurist Lauren Coleman and Noisy Cricket to bring a series of future conversations starting on the 11th of September in Manchester. But don't worry, all the dates, as I say, and how to get involved with all beyond the website. And big thanks, big thanks to my now growing team. Welcome to Christian Scott, who's our digital marketing apprentice from the Juice Academy, who joins our programmer Emma Kane, Fran Gallo, who's keeping me mobile and agile in my diary, and always to our ambassadors Jane Dalton and Adele Mitchardson. Please say hi to us on Twitter. And last, by no means least, thank you to BNY Mellon for hosting this month's podcast. And thank you to Mike Pearls, Athena Livesey and Jane Woods for taking part. I'm brilliant. I'm loving the Person with Purpose interview this week. This month is with Alison Page from DLA Piper in Leeds. Wow, it's been a whistle stop of a July, but don't forget to check out the website northernpowerwomen.com or northernpowerfutures.com to find out what that's all about. And do get in touch, podcast@northernpowerwomen.com. I hope you enjoy the episode. We did. Now it's time to go and have a lie down. Thank you.
You're not kidding. I need a lie down just listening to that. What an update. I feel positively sloth-like in comparison. As ever, a powerhouse in her own right, the one and only Simone Roche. Ta. Right, this was one of, I think, my favourite ever live panel discussions. Brilliant energy in the room, some great questions, and a fab audience as well. Thanks again to our kind hosts in Manchester, BNY Mellon. A fantastic welcome on a really beautiful sunny morning here in Manchester. Thank you so much to BNY Mellon for hosting us today. I made it out of the car park eventually. It was touch and go for some time. But here we are then, recording episode 14, I can't believe it, of the Northern Power Women podcast. As ever, we have three fantastic panellists today to answer a whole load of questions, and a brilliant and very noisy audience as well, which is great to hear. So please can you welcome Jane Wood. She's the director, head of EMEA. She told me how to say that earlier. And APAC Income and Tax here at BNY Mellon. Jane's the director in Manchester, head of EMEA Income and Tax. As I said, over 25 years experience in the investment banking and finance industry. It's an odd reaction. Working extensively in London, the Midlands and the North West. Jane is a mum to 16-year-old Lily. Last few years have been easy then, haven't they? Oh, teenage girl.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wonderful. Got two of those to look forward to. Mine are still a bit younger. A big welcome as well to Mike. Mike Pearls is the founder and CEO of MC2, a strategic marketing agency based in Manchester and San Francisco.
What'd you choose there? Could have chosen, you know, Lowestoft, but no. Slightly sunnier than Leeds. Dealing with brands around the world. Since 1999, he's taken MC2 from a two-man startup to one of the largest independents in its sector. He's driven to make a positive difference to the community he lives and works in, champion social mobility and entrepreneurship at every level. Mike, you're very welcome. And last but absolutely not least, Athena Livesey, Integrated Design Management at WSP Manchester. She's a local lass, Athena. Manchester girl has worked across the north as an engineering geologist and a multidisciplinary design manager to plan schemes for local councils like Stockport Interchange mixed-use development. She volunteers as director of the ACE Progress Network and leads a network, the 1,000 people strong emerging professionals in the built environment under the Association for Consultancy and Engineering across the UK. What I love about you, Athena, is you don't look like an engineer in any way, shape or form. You will see photos of this. Check them out at North Power Women. But a big welcome to all our panellists. Thank you so much. So let us begin. Three questions as ever today, and this is all about starting a conversation. So our panellists have had time to have a think about their views and their opinions, but yours, as ever, are really, really welcome. We love to hear from you. We love to hear what you have to say on all these subjects. So let's start off. And earlier this year, finance boss Dame Helena Morrissey said that women should see their career as a labyrinth, not a ladder. I don't know which is worse, a labyrinth, getting lost horribly and coming across many monsters. That sounds probably quite apt, doesn't it? We should stop trying to lean in, says Dame Helena, and instead persevere. Stop fighting the gender war, was one of her phrases. Jane, what do you make? What do you make of this, I suppose, view of how women should view their careers?
I think we've come a long way. There's no doubt about it. And it's probably at the moment the best it's ever been, but there's still some way to go, and I think we all talk about that, not just from a woman perspective, but from diversity across different cultures, different businesses, etc. I do think that we, in a few years' time, will see a lot of differences, and we'll continue to see a lot of differences. One of the things we were talking about earlier is how can we start influencing the younger generation now, get ahead of the game, instead of actually now, you know, talking about people who are fairly established in their careers and have been established in their careers for, you know, a significant amount of time, like myself. So I think we need to look at ensuring that that younger generation grabs what we've done and takes it that one step further.
Really interesting stuff. Exactly. And, you know, we might have it better than we've always had it, but that doesn't mean, you know, everything's done and dusted. Mike, I know you're really passionate, as I said in the introduction, about working with social mobility. Mm. And of course, a young woman perhaps attending a private school and growing up in leafy Cheshire is going to have a very different experience, you presume, in her working life than a young girl growing up in a council estate in Salford. And so we must be mindful of the fact that women doesn't encompass everybody.
Yeah, it's not homogenous, I think, but the same is true for anybody who's grown. I was a governor at Gorton Mount Primary School, and you see anybody who was born in Gorton, their chances of going the 3 miles into the city centre and actually getting a professional job and moving forward are significantly impaired, and actually their chances of being neat by the age of 25 are fairly significant. But if you're going back to Helena Morrissey, when she started the 30% Club, which was, you know, the network of men and women who were looking at, right, let's get more females into the boardroom. FTSE 100, there were, I think, 12% of females. Right now, we've got 28% of females, so it's kind of moving in the right board level.
Yeah.
But this is, I think, the difference, the step change, is that it's moved from being a female issue or woman issue into being a business critical issue, because I think boards have understood now that if you do not represent, if you do not look like the society that's outside you, the market will very quickly move past you, and I think the businesses are recognising that. You're seeing that with the gender pay debate that's up, the gender equality issues that go, you know, all the stuff right from you know, the celebrations around Pankhurst this year. you are seeing this complete cultural shift. So I actually agree with her comments that the time is now, you know, and the time is for us to actually grab it and move forward.
What do you make, Athena, as a woman who works in what's regarded as a very male-dominated sector, of her view that we should see our career as a labyrinth, as something we might go down some dead ends, but we can always come back and re-find our path again, as opposed to just think it always heads in the same direction?
I mean, after seeing David Bowie in those tight pants, I don't want to go in any labyrinth. Yeah, I grew up with the labyrinth, and I was like, it's like a nightmare. And the thing about a career in engineering is that I prefer to use the route of the phrase of a rock climbing wall, because when you climb, you actually build strength. And when you have to take on, say, an overhang, you know, when you get over that, things get easier until you get to the next step. And sometimes you have to make a leap to reach that handhold. And then when you get to the top, you then realise there's another bit that you've got to get over. And within the field of engineering, and I say the field because engineering, you don't need to be an engineer to work in engineering. There's a whole breadth of disciplines that we work with side by side. We have acoustic environmentalists, we have sustainability, we have human resources, accounts, you know, any subject that's happening outside is happening also inside of engineering. And we have to be able to understand how we interrelate with each other. And as you're going through your career, I think you definitely need to have a mentor, because if you look at the Labyrinth film again, she wouldn't have got through it without her mates, would she? You know, there would be dead ends here and there, and you need to have friends that you can work together with. And through the AC, I've also learned about lobbying, getting people on your side, talking about things. And I tell you now, not every important conversation happens at the table. A lot happens off the table. And at my first board meeting, I wore high heels, and then I realised for the dinner afterwards, everybody walked, and it was a half an hour walk, and I was like, oh my goodness, you know, never made that mistake again. Flat shoes in my back pocket, whip them out, we can carry on talking.
That's the persevering bit, isn't it? Not just the leaning in bit, definitely. Just as a side, any labyrinth that led me to David Bowie, I would be prepared to enter at any point. Anyone here who's been working for, say, more than 10 years, would you say you feel it has shifted? Has the culture shifted at all? Hands up if you think it has. Yeah, I'm guessing the rest of you, who doesn't think it shifted? Nobody, I guess, the people who haven't worked for more than 10 years. He didn't put their hand up on that. And what about the view of the labyrinth as well? Anyone got anything to say about the notion of a career as a labyrinth? Do you find it a bit daunting if you're at the beginning of your career, the notion of it being a labyrinth? I'm going to lunge. I'm going to do the first lunge of the podcast. You can see where I'm lunging to. Yeah, what would you make of that word, labyrinth?
I think labyrinth is a terrible word to use for exactly the reasons we've just heard. You know, it's extremely negative. It makes me feel like, why on earth would I want to have any part of it? You know, actually, being in a situation where you're kind of finding out what the next thing is around the corner, that's exciting. Yeah, that's great. If we can reframe it in that kind of language, that's wonderful. But no, don't make me think that every step of the way it's going to be a trudge, because that's pretty grim. I love the idea of kind of climbing, progressing. That's brilliant. But not that it's going to have to be, you know, the same type of step each time. I think encouraging people to think a bit as, you know, maybe this is a sideways move, maybe this is going to give me skill sets in a particular way, that's a great way to build a real breadth of experience, and I think that should definitely be encouraged.
Yeah, I remember once interviewing a really tremendous man who was blown up on his 23rd birthday. He was a soldier in Afghanistan on his 23rd birthday. He was blown up and survived, but completely lost his arm. And he talked extensively about, you can imagine, the really dark days that followed him. He has subsequently walked to the North Pole with Prince Harry. He's competed in the Invictus Games and won gold for his country on the bike. I mean, he's an extraordinary man called Jaco van Gass. And he talked about attempting Everest. And he said, when you're attempting Everest, you have to go up, and then you have to come back down in order to acclimatise because of the altitude sickness you can get. He said, so sometimes coming down is what you need to do to prepare yourself to then be able to climb even higher. And I think that's such a powerful analogy for work sometimes. You have to step back in order to move on. Jane, yes, I'm back to you.
Sorry, just to your point. I mean, one thing I think is really important as far as your career is concerned, and particularly something that is offered in a lot of the industries we work in, is variance. And certainly I've seen, yes, I've worked in the investment banking industry for 25 years. Oh, my God. Plus. I'm not going to tell you the plus. But on top of that, in that, I've done lots of different things. And I've had the ability, and I think, and I do think this is a woman thing. I think this is about us wanting to do different things and learn different things and be able to push our careers to that slightly different level that perhaps, you know, somebody else wouldn't. And we have tried a lot harder to kind of get certainly where we are. I think that there's more to come, but that variance is absolutely key, and I think gives us the opportunity to take it to the next level.
Okay, one final word from Mike.
Yeah, just on this, I think we are seeing this because there are role models around who are actually showing complete variance. So I sit on the board at Manchester Metropolitan University. It's chaired by the brilliant Vanda Murray. One part of the honour of being there is that you can sit on stage and do the graduations and see all this great talent that's coming through. And I was lucky enough to listen to Alice Webb, who is in charge of the BBC in the North. And she was talking about being a scientist and an engineer and going through and going and being incredibly successful. And then shifting into media, into something she knew nothing about, and then progressing through and using those skills and going forward. And you just kind of think, that's a role model that you can look at and see. So any of the young talent listening to that goes, I don't have to be pigeonholed. I can be successful in many different guises.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. Thank you all so very much. Loads of food for thought there. We'd love to hear from you, of course. Do get in touch. Let us know your thoughts on Twitter at North Power Women, or, of course, online at www.northernpowerwomen.com. Mike, let me stay with you for the first response to our second question, which is about the Great Exhibition of the North. Now, it's this summer, of course, in Newcastle Gateshead, celebrating great art and culture, design and innovation from all across the North. And the exhibition says it will tell the inspiring story of the North's most important innovators, businesses, artists and designers. Why are we still having to shout about how great the North is? And shouldn't this exhibition be in the South? Don't we know how great the North is here in the North? Why are we preaching to the choir already? Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. Talking of celebrating great innovators in the North, I think we should actually just take a pause because the remarkable Simone Roche, who is in charge of Northern Power Women, has just been awarded an MBE, I think. Are we able to...
I, Mike, did the first exclusive interview with Simone Roche, MBE, after she was awarded in a car park. You can listen on the Celebration podcast episode.
The next one has got to be Sam, but I think it is great, you know, that these kind of things are recognised. It's funny because I was reflecting on this, that it was 4 years since stood in Mosey down the road and listened in June 2014 to George Osborne when he, you know, just dropped in the concept of a Northern powerhouse. So actually it feels as though that brand's been around for a lot more than 4 years. Have we progressed? Yeah, I think we have. I think, you know, I was looking at the figures, 3.4 billion to the North in the growth deals through the devolution and all the rest of it, 13 billion committed on the transport, 70 million that's gone in the powerhouse school strategy. We've got the 400 million Northern Powerhouse Investment Fund. There is, but why are we still having to shout about this? The financialisation of our country has meant that since the 80s, that the entire power base and investment has gone into the southeast, and you know we have built this global city that's down there that you know has been sucking talent, sucking investment, sucking everything else. And let's face it, we have been underinvested in the north. So all of that money, is it a gift that's been given? No, we're playing catch up on this. So Has there been progress since that day in Mosey 4 years ago? Yes, there has. I think what's going on in Manchester around the health and social care, the £7 billion that's in there, the innovation, this is globally significant. We've got people from Harvard coming over, studying what we're doing over here. But there is a huge amount more that we need to do. What we need to do is, as a group, as a North, as a set of businesses, is speak as one voice. Use the Northern Powerhouse Partnership. Use the Northern Powerhouse Partners Program. Use this idea of coming together, speaking with one voice and saying, it's not enough. We want more. We want more. We want more. Because, you know, this is an incredible place to be. So, great exhibition of the North. I think it's fabulous what it's doing. I think the BBC, I think, is showing what it does best, yeah. Where it's kind of profiling these things that wouldn't get coverage elsewhere. I thought the Six Music thing was absolutely brilliant. I think the more that we can get this airtime, the better. I sit on the board, and it sounds though I sit on a lot of different boards, but I sit on the board of Rugby League World Cup 2021. We are bringing a global event into this country in 2021. All 31 games will be shown live on the BBC. It's very much a way where we're going. Do you know what? We can profile the North globally. The more we're getting these big events that can profile the North globally and say, look how brilliant this is. And, you know, just as an aside, Channel 4's going around the country having a look at where to go. Why would you not be in Manchester? Why would you not be in the North? Why would you, you know, so Channel 4, listen to this. Let's get our ducks in a row and establish here.
Well, now you've said that, Mike, it's a done deal, clearly. Channel 4, very avid listeners of this podcast. Athena, yes. Your thoughts?
So I worked in Newcastle, as I said, with the Shallow Marine Voids up there. And I got to know the people because I was on site for 18 months with 1,200 fellas. And, you know...
I think you could tell some stories. That's probably for another day. Okay.
And the people that I was working with were part of the old shipping industry that was up there. And I was just fascinated by all the skills that they had there, but no one was talking about it. And I think having these kind of... I see them as celebrations of heritage, to be able to bring the communities back together, improve morale, but also I think it's something like 16 to 18 year olds are not in education or employment. That's double the national average in the North. And I think we need to inspire those 16 to 18, you know, families together to say, you know, this is your heritage. This is part of you already. You can do and follow and build on these legacies yourself, working together. So I see that very much as part of its purpose. And talking about One Voice, the Association for Consultancy and Engineering, that's one of their slogans, to talk with One Voice. And by being the national chair for the Progress Network from Manchester, I very much see this London bubble that I have to almost merge through as I get out the train to go into the City of London over to Westminster and just remind people that the way that people are thinking up here is different. You know, we've got fantastic universities that are doing, we've got the Graphene Institute here, investment in universities, we've got Newcastle University looking at pharmaceuticals, we've got them looking at using tech in medicine, the first in the world that's been done up here. We've then also got lots of associations that are working together. That's the thing about the North, very good collaborators. And that's because we're very good at communicating with each other. You know, we're not afraid to say hello, you know, when you're about to cross the lights, you know. But in London, they don't want to be distracted because, to be fair, you don't know if a cyclist's going to come around the corner. But, you know, this is part of our strength.
Really true, all of that. And you know, we are preaching to the converted here, of course, in this room and throughout the whole, in fact, of the North of England. But... Jane, there is still this strange attitude that we're a little bit behind here. We're not innovators. We're a little bit backwards. We're always playing catch up. You work between London and the North, of course, a lot. Is that an attitude that you see?
My personal view is certainly it's not something that I see in the business that I work in. Whether or not that has been there historically, I think whenever you're doing anything called north shoring, near shoring with a business, you will always have a view of where's my job going. But that doesn't matter whether you're in the north or the south. From my perspective, I think that we just need to shout a bit more. I think we do a fantastic job. And I'm not just talking about Manchester here. I'm talking about the Northwest and even probably take it down to the Midlands as well. We've got some fabulous businesses. We've got a fabulous demographic, both of school, both of universities and schools. And we forget about schools sometimes because, you know, there's new apprenticeship programs that have been put in by the government. This is going to really add an extreme amount of value to us. You've also got to remember that people tend to come up north to university, and a lot of them stay. So we're actually attracting people from outside of the Northwest. A lot of people that work for me who've been to Manchester universities have actually decided to stay in Manchester, which is fantastic. And that's bringing more talent, more diversity, everything that we're looking for. But we just need to shout a bit louder.
We're quite good at shouting in the north, though. I think we'll probably be all right.
Absolutely.
We'll be able to get through on that one. Oh, look, time is sadly ticking, but do, you know, your comments, again, really so welcome. I'm not just saying it. We really do mean it. So podcast@northernpowerwomen.com is where you can email or, of course, online on Twitter @NorthPowerWomen. And, if there's a subject you would really love to be discussed in a future podcast, Simone said we do this every single month live across the north. We're in Newcastle, Liverpool, Leeds, Lancaster, you know, everywhere across the north. So let us know what you would like discussed. Let us know if there's an issue and you think, do you know what, I'd really like to hear what the panel have to say about that. Do please get in touch. You can just email podcast@northernpowerwomen.com. So final question. I don't know if you know, but Northern Power Women Podcast has been nominated for an award. Hello, I know. It's a Northern Blog Award for Best Podcast. Do get online, just search for Northern Blog Awards and please vote for the Northern Power Women Podcast. We'd really appreciate it. But just thought we'd slip that in there. But how important in your business, and Athena, I'm going to start with you on this one, are awards and honours? In fact, how important are awards and honours for business? And whisper it, are there maybe a few too many?
I think I work in a very large business. We've got 8,000 people in the UK. So it's not always easy to be recognised for the work that you're doing, like at that top level. And these awards help you get noticed. And also the awards themselves are a process. So it's not actually about winning. So the first award that I went for was the Women in Construction and Engineering. And I didn't win that, but that was a 7-month process of self-discovery. This is probably part of why I've changed my career. And I started to realise, you know, I've got so much more to offer than my technical expertise. And that is social impact that you can have as well. So you keep amplifying what you're putting in. And I think that will help you also be, you become highlighted and you become more of a role model in the area for those people who aren't sung. For those people who need to see somebody, to say to them that effort is worth it. And so I'm very much for awards, also mentoring women and men through the award process so it's not overwhelming, so they actually get more from it and how to make the most of it. And so I am a champion for those awards. And also we definitely have to vote for the podcast to get up there.
What she said. Yes, please do. Yeah, all the details will be on the website, so do go and have a look. Thank you. Jane, how important are awards and honours for business, for individuals and for businesses?
So I think I'm glad you said individuals, because I think individuals, if I look at particularly the way the financial services industries work, we have a lot of internal awards and recognition that we give, which is very powerful. Age retention, it enables us to give people opportunity, etc. The financial services industry has an awful lot of awards. There are a lot out there, and yes, you know, they center around excellence. And I think that's the thing to look at. it's the centering of excellence. We go back to the previous question and we look at the awards, how the awards can affect attraction to the Northwest. Surely you can't have too many, because it puts you out there, it puts your name on the map.
Thank you very much. And Mike, finally to you. In the sector you work in, I've presented a few awards. You get very raucous, you lot. How important are they?
I think, listen, there's a spectrum of awards, isn't there? There's ones that are meaningful, and there's ones that are pure commercial models that are, you know, with shortlists of 27 people. You know, I'm not quite sure how that makes up a shortlist. You know, well, maybe it makes up a target for table sales. But I've also been in the room where the Power Women list is there, and you tell me that that's not meaningful for the people who are on that list. Again, another board that I'm on, but I chair an organisation called Greater Sport. We have over 50% diversity in the mix. We have the Greater Sports Awards in November that is celebrating all the volunteers from around Greater Manchester who are the netball coaches and the this, that and the other, you know, all over these heroes that give up all the time to stimulate activity and build communities. So where you've got awards that build communities, that build meaningful celebrations, I think they are incredibly important. Yeah. Whether just commercial models, please stop them, and let's, you know, move on from that.
Yeah. Unless you're not my mum, who says if you win it, they're very important. If you don't, they don't matter. No one cares. Which we'll be saying if we don't win. But please do vote for us. We'd really love it and appreciate it. It's the Northern Blog Awards for Best Podcast. You three have been brilliant. Haven't they been brilliant? Just fantastic insight. It's so interesting to hear. I mean, I lost count of how many boards Mike is on, but, you know, we'll tot it up afterwards for sure. Thank you so much, all of you. You've been amazing. To Jane Woods, to Athena Livesey, and to Mike Pearls as well. Thank you so much. You've been awesome. Ah, really enjoyed that. Thank you if you were there. We would love to come and visit you, actually. So do get in touch if you'd like us to visit. All you need to do is email podcast@northernpowerwomen.com. So, to this month's big interview with a woman who has such passion for her job, such obvious joy at doing what she does. It's just wonderful to listen to. It was a real pleasure to talk to DLI Piper's managing partner, Alison Page. I started by asking her why she'd chosen law.
Why did I want to become a lawyer? I always wanted to be a lawyer. I didn't ever want to do anything else. So I think probably from about the age of 11, I was pretty certain, and I knew that's what I wanted to do. My dad was very influential in my career and all the choices that I made, in that he, even though we're from Northern Ireland and I was brought up during the Troubles in Northern Ireland, my father worked abroad a lot, and he was very, very keen that we all, to be honest with you, leave Northern Ireland and spread our wings and go and do something elsewhere. And I was very good at languages at school, so I knew that he said, well, you know, you've really got to think about a career that has an international element to it, or could have an international element if you want to. Interestingly, I in the end have ended up in Leeds, and I love it here, and I don't want to go and work in any of our foreign offices, but that I think is how I ended up where I am now, though, in terms of I was encouraged by a very clear-minded parent to really achieve whatever I wanted to achieve.
And did you see any female lawyers around you? Because I'm thinking of Cherie Blair, who I interviewed on this podcast a couple of months ago, who talked about the fact that when she first walked into chambers, she started to work as a barrister, there weren't even any changing rooms for women in there. You know, they just literally, women were not part of the furniture at all. Did you see women around you who you could aspire to be?
No. Bluntly speaking, most of my friends' parents stayed at home. My mum was one of the only working mums in my peer group. I think I'm thinking back now, but that is actually right. I mean, one of my friends was part-time because she was a dentist, but other than that, they all stayed at home and brought up the children. That's what Northern Ireland was like back then.
Yeah.
I didn't have female role models as such.
Did you feel any
I never really thought about it.
Yeah, did you feel any nerves then entering a profession where you couldn't look at a woman around you and think, well, she's done it, therefore I can do it?
No, I didn't. To be honest with you, I went to an all-girls school in Belfast, and it was a very academic school, and we were all pushed really, really hard. All of my peer group were going to university. At least 50% of us left Northern Ireland, and most of us haven't gone back. Mm. And a lot of us went and travelled around the world. We were brought up to be ambitious, and which I suppose was fairly unusual then, but it never occurred to me ever that I couldn't do anything that a man could do. So it didn't really matter to me that I didn't have female role models as such. I just thought that I could achieve what I wanted to.
And when you left, that incredibly supportive, pretty much all female atmosphere, and went on to university and then started into the world of work, how did you find that? Was it a bit of a wake-up call?
I think the workplace is the first time I'd ever encountered the concept that somehow men could achieve and were entitled to, in some ways, achieve more than you were. Mm. It's certainly the case that, because, I mean, the legal profession is still male-dominated, not at the entry level anymore, but at the senior echelons, it's heavily male-dominated, which creates a certain culture. There's no doubt about that. And men particularly do, I think, there's a sort of clubby atmosphere, if you like, in some respects.
Still?
Yeah, there is. Mm. There is. I think we as a firm are not traditional, particularly. We're not one of the old school firms. We are fairly agnostic about where people come from or what they've done. We don't care what school they went to particularly. We only care if they're clever or not. Yeah. And if they fit into our culture, which is, I suppose, very entrepreneurial and ambitious. So I think it's probably consistent with how I've been brought up. The firm that I've ended up and spent most of my career in, DLA Piper, is it fits my personality very well. But there is no doubt that all law firms are still struggling with the keeping women in the profession and breaking down a culture which allows men to progress more easily than females.
So why is that? Because it's interesting that you said there's still, there's a lot of women at entry level. What makes, in your experience, what makes women walk away sort of midway through their careers?
Well, there's quite a lot of women do still want to spend more time with their children than working full time in a law firm at an eye. And perhaps we have been behind the pace in setting out the opportunities for our female staff, and indeed our male staff as well. The younger men want to spend more time at home. We're getting much, much better at allowing people to work flexibly. But most of what we do is driven by our clients' demands. And for the big corporate law firm, there is still that very, a culture where long hours historically have been what we have done, and you're always at your client's beck and call.
Yeah.
So, but I do think that is changing because, of course, our clients are changing. Their staff are changing too, and they want to work in a different way. So I think we've still got a way to go, but I think we're making huge amounts of progress, and we've done that in a fairly short period of time. When I look back at what my career was like when I started, when you weren't allowed to wear trousers as a female lawyer, not at DLA Piper, I know, unbelievable, but you weren't allowed to wear trousers, or indeed, wait for this, culottes. I'm not quite sure why anyone would want to wear culottes in any event, but the trousers was a bit beyond the pale, thank you very much. That was in 1990-something. Absolutely, it was a very, very different environment. And, the sorts of behaviours that you had to put up with, being referred to as decorative and, being brought along to meet clients. This is not DLA Piper, I hasten to add.
Yeah.
Being brought along to meet clients so that you could charm them and those kind of things. Things that you would never say to young lawyers nowadays, unless you wanted to be in front of HR the next day. It's been a really interesting career. I've loved it, I have to say. It's been very varied indeed. I'm lucky.
Hearing how things have changed for women over the last couple of decades is really encouraging. We still hear stories, don't we, though, about women women and men from ethnic minorities, and women and men who are from working class backgrounds still are underrepresented. How do we change that story?
So we have I can just speak about my own experience, what we are trying to do to change that. And what I will say is that a lot of our young people at DLA are from working class backgrounds and are first generation university. And we actively go out to seek them. I mean, we have a really strong, I'm the managing partner of the Leeds office. We have a really strong relationship with the University of Leeds, and we actively work with them to seek out their very best students who want to come and live and work and continue to live and work in the city, but want a global career. And we look for the young people who are really ambitious, particularly who are first generation university. And we've been very successful in that. But we also have a programme called Break Into Law, which is aimed specifically at encouraging young people from state schools who haven't been to, whose parents weren't at university, potentially are from very unprivileged backgrounds, to coach them and help them understand what a career in the law looks like, that it's totally accessible to them. It doesn't matter where you came from, it just matters where you're going to, where you want to get to, and that you have the ability to do it and you understand what you need to do to get there. I think, to be honest, that programme starts at 16. I think probably we need to start that much, much younger. You need to catch those children, those really bright children, as they enter secondary school education, and really work with them to ensure that they excel in what they are very best at, so that they understand right from the get-go what they need to be doing. And perhaps they don't have that environment at home, so they need adults they can look up to and can chat to and aspire to be like. Perhaps where that is not what the home environment is like.
Yeah. What one thing could change to make law an even more diverse sector? If you said, look, if I could wave a wand now, this is what I would do.
I don't know really. I think at the point at which we have got 50% representation on our executive and our board of female lawyers who are also prepared to stand up and say, guys, this has to change. Because it's not just getting a woman on a board. It's got to be someone who's absolutely prepared to drive change through.
That seems an exhausting prospect. See, it can be a bit of an exhausting prospect, can't it? For a, you know, to put that on a woman's shoulders, you know, and say, right, you've got to stand up and you've got to be prepared to do all this. Should we be focusing on perhaps the men on that board to change their mindsets?
That is going to happen through passage of time, though, isn't it? So the younger generation, the guys who are in their early 40s, late 30s now, do not think. I mean, it's not that all of my male colleagues think that way. No, they don't. Yeah, I mean, many of them believe absolutely. In fact, it's a ridiculous notion to suggest that most people don't think that women can do exactly the same role as men. Our graduate intake is more than 50% female. I think 73% of our trainee solicitors coming through next year are female. So unless we get something really horrifically badly wrong for that generation, there is going to be big representation at board level, isn't there? Because it's difficult to imagine how else you could fill the seats. So, but I think for this generation, it is more of a challenge to change habits and ways of thinking. And law firms are not corporate entities, although many of them are run like corporate businesses now, especially the very, very big ones like ours. So I don't know, there's still a little bit of a challenge around that. But I think for our own business, you know, our CEO, Simon Levine, is very, very clear on his ambitions for the firm around the representation of women at a senior level. And he has introduced more females onto the executive. One of our non-executive directors is now female as well. So I think things have changed very substantively here. Certainly during the course of my career, I've seen enormous changes.
You're so right when you say, you know, the majority of men we all talk to don't hold for a second any notion that women aren't equal for men. And yet we still hear these horror stories, don't we, coming out of, you remember last month there was the issue around women on boards and some anecdotes coming in from male board members talking about, well, you know, women can't really take that pressure or aren't ambitious enough. And you think, goodness me, these voices, that there aren't many of them, but they can shout really loudly.
I know. It's such a shame for them, isn't it, to be so so out of the loop, really. They're just yesterday's men, aren't they, really? I think, you know, the brave chairman would remove them from the board straight away and just like, you know, you, if that is how old-fashioned your thinking is in this respect, how far behind the times must you be in every other respect? Perhaps you're not right for my board. Politics, of course, it is the chairman.
Well, yes. You never know. Stranger things have happened. Absolutely. I mean, you were, as you said, a Northern Irish lass originally, but absolutely an adopted Northerner now. You've been in Leeds for so much of your life. I mean, yes. Talking about the North and our place, really, and our role within the business of this country, do you still believe the North plays second fiddle to the South? And if so, how do we fix that?
So I think we've got some way to go. I'm on the steering committee of Business North, which is, we have members of many of the very big businesses right across the north of England. And that really, the motivation to set that up came from the idea of the Northern Powerhouse, which, to be honest with you, I think is one of the most fantastic concepts. And it's become a very big brand. It's something which is recognised globally. And I think it's a huge opportunity for the north of England to work together, all the cities to work together, rather than competition, to create a recognised global economic entity. Mm. And I think there is huge ambition from the big businesses to push our politicians, push Whitehall, to support that, to give us power for transport for the north, to start making strategic decisions about the north of England. I think we have got a long way to go, but there's a massive, massive opportunity. And I think as business people, we have absolutely got to make our voices heard about what is required in terms of investment up here. It's better for the whole of England. It's not a north-south, north versus south thing. It's better for everyone if we can really start pushing up the economic activity up here.
Hearing you speak with such passion for your career is just such a wonderful thing. If any young women are listening to this, perhaps still at school, perhaps at university, and considering a law conversion, considering in any way getting into your profession, how would you sell it to them?
Well, when I was a young lawyer working at DLA Piper, I honestly felt like I was the luckiest girl in the world. I really did. And I still feel like that today. So for something to continue to inspire you many, many years into your career, and being a lawyer is really tough at times, but you learn a lot. You meet incredibly interesting people. You get to do exciting stuff. For now, for the new generation of young girls and young boys coming through, they get to work all around the world. They get to work in foreign offices if that's what they want to do. They get to transfer around the world. There's so much opportunity. It's a really, really exciting career where you get to really expand your mind. It's constantly challenging. Even now that I'm approaching the big 5-0, I can barely make myself say that out loud. Oh God, I need therapy. Anyway, even now, I still get to do work that makes me have to, you know, I've got to really think about what I'm doing. And you get to think strategically a lot because of the size of the stuff that you're doing. It's just really exciting. I would really look into it. I think the legal profession, especially in the big corporate law firms, is incredibly exciting. Incredibly exciting. And you can, you know, once you've become a lawyer, in much the same way as if you choose accountancy instead, you can move on to do other things and be very successful in business. It's a very, very good training for your brain. And a way of thinking very logically, which I think stands you in good stead if you then decide you want to go on to have a business career.
And it doesn't matter where you're from or what your gender is or how much money your mum or dad earned.
Nobody cares. We just could not care less. And we don't, and on the same wavelength, though, we don't discriminate against young people whose parents have sent them to private school. We just couldn't care less whether they did or not, you know. So it's not that we are, you know, solely recruiting the working class children. Like everything else, every business is best if it has balance in it. So people from all walks of society and life are welcome here, so long as they're clever. That is all we require. A brain.
Thank you, Alison. Really terrific to talk to you this month. Thank you again. If there's someone you'd love to hear on this podcast, just come and let us know. Email podcast@northernpowerwomen.com. Now it's time for Ask the Hive. It's a place where you ask for some career or some life advice, and the Northern Power Women Network responds. This month, it's all about the skills you need to do a job well.
How do senior leaders feel about recruiting people into their sector when they don't necessarily have the experience in that industry?
Experience is one set of four attributes you're trying to assess in any recruitment exercise. The other three are skills, knowledge, and behaviour. It doesn't help that the match of person to the job that is being recruited is being made against an often very poorly written job description that is indistinct in setting out what is required. If the role is generalist, then I think experience is less essential. Whereas if you're recruiting into some very specialist role at the extreme of rocket scientist or a brain surgeon, then experience becomes very much more essential. All sorts of promises are made by the recruiting industry to match the right person to the job. But when that job is so poorly defined, what you get is garbage in, garbage out. A little more investment of time in writing a concise and precise job description pays significant dividend.
I am really passionate about the idea of getting as many different skill sets as possible into my industry. The last thing we need when we're talking about generating new ideas is to get them all from the same talent pool. So by recruiting people who just look like us, sound like us, that is not helpful. You know, we need to go to where other people are and understand their skill sets and what they can bring. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that the first sets of conversations we have with these people will be easy, because the whole point is we're speaking different languages. But the richness you get from those kinds of debates and working out what the common ground is absolutely fundamental to bringing out something that's really different in our industry. So very keen for that to happen, and I definitely think there should be much more of it.
Well, I think if you're applying for a job outside of the sector, I'd like to think that most employers will look for core skills that are common for any job, regardless of the sector. And I think that's what we all need to focus on when we go outside the sector. However, I also think you need to learn a lot about the other sector as well. Understand the other sector. Read as much as you can. I would research it. I'd also research a lot about the job, and then I'd try and connect my core skills with the job and with the sector, because there'll be commonality across them all. So, for example, you know, I work in a housing association, and we do a lot of strategic management. And to be honest with you, no, give and take. Strategic management is strategic management the world over. Very adaptable. But you have to convince the interviewer that you are adaptable and you know how to adapt the skills to meet the situation. So we welcome in our organisation people from the other sector, other sectors, because it helps to bring difference and diversity, and core skills are core skills. However, you can't help but be impressed when somebody's learnt about the job and the sector and then matches the skills. So yeah, go for it, I would say. Absolutely. Do your research though.
So when I'm recruiting for a role, I am looking for key competencies that are associated with doing that role well, and that is more linked to the skills that a person should possess rather than the experience in that specific role. Because the way I see it is, would you rather have somebody who has the experience but does not have the right qualities or the attributes, or would you rather have somebody who has the right attributes and demonstrates the right competencies that you can train to do the job role well? And in my experience, I feel that you can teach people about the job itself, but you can't teach them the attitude that they bring to work. So I would definitely recruit people who don't have necessarily the experience in the industry but have the right skills and the attitude that I'm looking for when I'm recruiting.
Some really good practical advice there. Thank you so much if you helped out on this one. Now, this month, I really want to hear from you. I very much feel this woman's pain. Can you help her?
I find it really hard to leave for the day before I've answered every email, and I'm working longer hours as a result. I know not everything's urgent, but I can't seem to break the habit. Can you help?
As someone who routinely panics at 4 o'clock on a Saturday if I get an email that I must respond now, I'd personally be very interested to hear the advice you can offer on this one. So do get in touch. It's dead easy. Record a voice memo on your phone. You'll have a little app on your smartphone, whether it's an iPhone or an Android phone. They'll see a little voice memo feature. Then just email that to podcast@northernpowerwomen.com or WhatsApp on your phone. Add the Northern Power Women podcast. We are on 07928 387 712. That's 07928 387 712. Add that, please, to your phone. Then when you've got the message screen, instead of typing something in as you normally would, there's a little microphone icon there. Hold it down as you speak. When you take your finger off, ping, with the power of technology, your message is sent to us and you can be part of our podcast. Dead easy to do. That number again, 07928 387 712. All those details are online for you at northernpowerwomen.com. Oh my goodness, there we go again. Another month of inspiration, idea sharing, and practical advice as well. Massive thanks if you've taken part in any way this month. Do reach out and say hello. You can leave us a message wherever you get your podcasts from, or of course send a message at North Power Women on Twitter. The next episode arrives on Monday, the 3rd of September, and until then, this is the Northern Power Women podcast. I'm Sam Walker, and this has been a What Goes On Media production for Northern Power Women.